Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I can't. I cannot do this.
You have to! It's the rules!
Fuck! Fine.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 619 for the week of June 15th, 2026. I am Hot Beer David T. Cole, and I'm here with Applebee's squatter Sarah D. Bunting.
Those were happy hours.
Handsome man murderer Tar Ariano.
Don't check the ducts at Red Robin.
And crib sheet creator Randy Brown.
I didn't call anyone.
Welcome to Extra Hot, great for another week. Joining us, she is a comic and a seed artist that you have heard with us many times. It's Brandy Brown.
Welcome back, Brandy.
Hello.
We are here, unfortunately, to talk about Never Change. In 2008, graduating seniors at North Meadows High School didn't quite finish the whole school year. A tornado caused the cancellation of the last 2 weeks of school. But now, because of an education new deal just passed in whatever state the school is in, New Jersey probably, all those seniors have to return and complete the 2 weeks of school they missed, including all relevant extracurriculars. The movie was directed by Marty, I'm going to say, Scusbo, who has previously directed a bunch of Joe Pera Talks With You and Joe Pera's comedy special, among other credits. Marty also co-wrote the screenplay with John Reynolds, probably still best known for his role in Search Party. Never Change! Exclamation mark dropped on Hulu June 17th. It is a movie. We are going to talk about all of it, potentially. Let's do the Chen check-in. Brandy, should our listeners watch Never Change?
Never.
Sarah?
Absolutely not.
Dave?
I don't break this out often, but when I do, I mean it.
You suck and you're wasting my time!
It was so bad.
Oh, yeah, my God.
Don't watch it.
So bad.
Let's discuss, though, because it is curious. When I saw who made this and the cast, which includes Patty Harrison, John Early, Maria Thayer, Zach Cherry, Joe Firestone, Gary Richardson, and Roberta Calindres, all of whom I love.
And Topher Grace.
And Topher Grace, who is also present. I thought we would be in for something like Romy and Michelle's high school reunion meets Strangers with Candy. It's not. Brandy, how did this many funny people fuck up this bad?
I have notes on a phone, and then I had to take a break because I was like, yo, they really gave me this whole 2 hours to watch.
Yeah.
I had to cleanse my palate with the canon. What if Can't Hardly Wait, but with adults, but not good? It was one of those things where tonally I was like, is this going to be completely absurdist and off the wall?
Yeah.
And it feels like it was a sketch that went too long.
Yeah.
You know what it felt like to me as far as like the origin of it is that they had a list of comedian friends. They invited them all to an undisclosed location, asking them to bring one loud character. And then they would just figure out how to connect them all as they go along. While they're all supposed to be adult students returning to the fold, that's about all the connective tissue this movie has as far as that premise goes. There is a guy that is channeling early Jim Carrey's Dumb and Dumber head with Kevin McDonald's voice from Kids in the Hall. And he's just in a totally separate movie from everything else that's happening. Not only that, but his like very loud antics don't really do anything for the movie. Like they set it up. It's like the first thing that really happens in the movie that he's sort of obsessed with one of his classmates from back in the day. And it like really doesn't play into it that much, except for like a tiny little gag at the end. It was just weirdly unconnected. And then on top of that, there was like one joke that I laughed at in the whole thing. Like, I'm not even joking. it was the hot beer. Just
oh yeah.
The problem was with a lot of the jokes, I could see them being funny in a different movie with a different group of people that had a better sense of comic timing for these little beep, 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 beep moments of comedy, which a lot of these were. Mm-hmm. They're at the diner. They're all drinking their coffee. Every time they take a sip, it's super hot. Then they forget and they take another sip. But the timing was all off. Like, it didn't have that rhythm that made it build. It just seemed like, okay, you introduced me to the joke six times instead of building it five times after the first one. Mm-hmm. And then later on, in the same kind of thing, somebody takes a sip of beer and it's hot as their coffee. That was like the only thing that was like, oh, okay, that was good. Unfathomably unfunny for who was involved.
The characters also totally didn't make sense. Like, you look at like the guy who's supposed to be like the football player, and I was like, no, you're the weird theater guy or mm-hmm. like the debate team. Like, what? And then I thought like the one guy who's like really dumb or had like a concussion or something, it was totally just all honestly impressive that bad.
Yep.
Sarah has been quiet because we are in a fight. This is the last episode of the podcast. No, Sarah, what were your thoughts?
I really hated pretty much everything about it. Mm-hmm. It was very disconnected. People seem to be in different movies, except for the part where they're in like a shouting contest. But it wasn't just that it wasn't funny, because there were like funny lines in there, but none of it is grounded in how anyone actually has ever behaved. Like, there's not a straight man or a believable, relatable underpinning of anything. It's just like everything is heightened to a power of 10. And then it's also not edited. Like, one of the very first gags, if you can call it that, because it's not funny, is the contemporary, like the news reports talking about what's going to happen with this new deal. And there's like bullet points on the screen and it says yada, yada. And then Seinfeld at the end. And I'm like, no, that doesn't, mm-hmm. that doesn't work. Mm-mm. We get the reference, but putting it in there is not funny. Go back and do it again. Real, but they didn't.
Real Facebook joke.
Yeah. Nobody wanted to tell each other in this group of funny, talented people that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And then the good lines just got run over by gigantic bits. And I kept thinking about this movie. We put part of it on our public access show, Moist Towelette, way back in the day. After Animal House, there were a whole bunch of like 8th generation photocopies of Animal House. And mm-hmm. one of them was called King Frat. And this is the King Frat of Can't Hardly Wait. Mm.
Is that the one where the frat's the only surviving member after an electrical and he becomes the king?
That's Pizza Frat.
Oh, Pizza Frat. Yeah. Yep. Right.
My bad. He becomes a giant inflatable.
All right. So we're watching King Frat.
Mm-hmm. Actually, don't do it, because okay. that theme song is pernicious. Mm-hmm. Pernicious. At a certain point, very early on, I had to accept that this was not going to be good or improve. And then I could sort of do a necropsy on why it sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that kept me entertained for another 12 minutes. And uh-huh. then it was still only like 23 minutes in. And I was like, oh, my fucking God. So, yeah, we are kind of in a fight.
Yeah. I was actively angry at this movie after about 15 minutes when I realized, oh, it's not going to break out into some sort of surrealist thing or something like that. Like, this was just the lame setup until it actually hits its gear. And it's like, you know, mad masterpiece or something like that. Mm-hmm. Never happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was people trying to do Wet Hot American Summer and falling yes. incredibly short. Like, it has all of the trappings of that. The one guy he's got this other whole thing with an alien force. And again, that doesn't really pay off either. Felt a lot like the meteorite coming to hit the camp in Wet Hot American Summer.
Yep.
A lot of characters that sort of map more or less with some of that stuff. Except Wet Hot American Summer congealed. Also, it had 200 jokes to this one's 2.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They both had cool ringer tees.
Yeah. I mean, if this was Mad Magazine, this one would be called Blech Snot American Bummer.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this was a situation where someone was under a holding thing and they had to just burn off something. Because that would actually be funny if they made this. They're just like, look, we need to get out of this deal. We need to make something. Let's just do this shit yeah. and get it out of here. Because it, like, when it started, one, when it had the radio thing at the very beginning, I was like, oh, this is going to be like a serial killer kind of thing. And it had a very, like, Strangers with Candy vibe at the beginning. I was like, all right, so this is going to be weird, but it's going to, like, go into something. And it just kept going and going and going. And the other thing, now that you bring up Wet Hot American Summer, I noted this. And I go, so I graduated from high school, actually my 25th was last year. I did not go because I was opening for Maria Bamford. But anyway, I was on. I was actually on Livewire. But I graduated in 2000, and this felt like it was class of 95 or earlier, even class of 1980. I understand, fine, if you just want to pretend cell phones don't exist, that's cool. I understand. But some of this stuff was, one, time set in a weird, like, not just like, oh, this is a timeless time, but it felt like the 80s. And then, or like the early 90s. And then also, these felt like they were written. I had to be like, no, they're how old? They're 35. They're like a decade younger than me.
There's also the fact that it evidently hates its characters and is mean to all of them. Mm-hmm. And never mind like inconsistency, bad joke structure, never mind any of that. Why should we care either way when the script has contempt for everyone involved, as it should for itself?
Yeah. That's why I'm working with my conspiracy theory. Here's what I think happened. This is Brandy's Conspiracy Entertainment Industry Corner. Mm-hmm. I think somebody responsible had a good idea for this script. They would not make it, or they're in a holding deal, or it was a situation where they were like, any idea you come up with during this duration belongs to us. They did not want to make it with that studio. They did not want it to go to Hulu or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we do not, if we can't do this vision the way we want to do it, fuck you. We're going to get you something.
Yeah.
And we're going to just burn this script off, because there's no other reason why that group of people did that. And so I think they were all there for a check. I think that I'm going to give the writer and the whole cast credit, and that congratulations, you fulfilled the goals of the contract. And for that, you're all winners.
Yeah, and we will never speak of any of it again. I think you're right.
Newfangled stories on my electric story box.
It is time to go around the dial. First stop, talking about something she's watched on TV recently. Tara.
Well, I wanted to see what else was going on in the TV movie space, so I watched a couple that were recent as well. First, Miss You, Love You on HBO. This was written and directed by Jim Rash, formerly a screenplay Oscar co-winner for The Descendants. Also, he is the actor who played the dean in Community. Andrew Rannells plays Jamie, who we meet when he arrives at Diane's fairly remote house in New Mexico. Diane, played by Allison Janney, nursed her second husband through Parkinson's, and he has just died. Jamie's there to help with funeral prep, even though he did not know Diane or her husband. Diane has a son named Tyler from her first marriage, who's now a fancy war reporter and is overseas while the events of the movie are taking place. And Jamie is Tyler's personal assistant. So basically, he is playing Tyler in lieu of Tyler, for real. This is mostly a two-hander with about five other speaking roles. It takes place almost entirely in the house, so it definitely feels like a stage play that was adapted for the screen. Not that thoughtfully. That may be why Allison Janney immediately feels like she is projecting to the back of the house. She is real angry to start and stays that way for a while. But these two characters being in this awkward situation has been thought through from every angle, including how Jamie would want to ingratiate himself by being extremely professional and also kind of a bitch on Diane's behalf. For example, there's a runner about a plant that Diane's late husband bought that is dying because Jamie can immediately tell she has overwatered it. So when they go to the nursery where the husband got this plant to order the flowers for the funeral, Jamie casually brings up that the succulent isn't doing so well and the owner is so apologetic that she gives them a discount. And Diane's like, oh, damn, I'm kind of a sucker for movies about acquaintances who have nothing in common forming unlikely relationships. And both the leads are playing characters they could do in their sleep, but that's not necessarily a negative. I also watched Office Romance on Netflix. Brett Goldstein co-wrote it with Joe Kelly, one of the co-creators of Ted Lasso. Goldstein also stars as Daniel, a newly hired in-house lawyer at the airline Air Cruise. Jackie, Jennifer Lopez, has somewhat recently taken over as CEO after the retirement of her founder father, Captain Jack. Guys, Edward James Olmos is in this thing as her father.
Wow. Okay.
Jackie's getting sued because it's not important, except the circumstances throw Daniel and Jackie together and they can't deny their attraction, even though there are impediments to their being together.
In addition to the people I already named, the supporting cast includes Betty Gilpin as a best friend in a rom-com who actually gets to be legitimately funny, Tony Plana as a mean board member, and Bradley Whitford in his most Billy Madison-esque role since Billy Madison, speaking of movies about people going back to high school. I know the rom-com is not a fashionable genre, but I still like them enough to have gone to see You, Me, and Tuscany in a theater on opening day. Office Romance is funnier, sexier, and more romantic than that real movie. So if you like rom-coms, check it out, though maybe not with younger kids. It is a lot raunchier than you would probably expect a Jennifer Lopez vehicle to be, and that was a pleasant surprise as well. For my plug, I interviewed Katie Dippold about the end of Widow's Bay at the Daily Beast. As we're recording this, that is not up yet, but I will link to my author page there and it'll pop up there probably very soon or by the time this comes out.
All right, Brandy, what have you been watching?
My Mamie got fish. My party got Aster. The Met is still alive. Nixon 5. One of my favorite TV shows, The Gilded Age, a.k.a. Hattress, as I call it. If the game Hattress was like a show, that's what it was. They just battle with hats. It's incredible.
Yep.
A couple of videos appeared on Instagram, one from Cynthia Nixon and then one from an actress, I forget her name, from behind the scenes when the Knicks won game 4. They were the Black New Yorkers who were doing something and then like Little Streep's character. Mm-hmm. I'm blanking right now.
Miriam.
But they were celebrating it. Yeah, Miriam. They were all celebrating backstage and like the guy who's playing the pastor is like recording. So you're seeing this celebration video from Cynthia Nixon. And then another video dropped where they're all in the church and it's like the parishioners or the, you know, the worshipers are all the Black characters and they're just dancing and it's just, it's so good. It's just them finding out the Knicks won game 4. And those are really, really fun videos. So I would look those up. I don't know if there's more. My favorite character and my favorite actress from that show, Ashley Atkinson, liked my comment on Cynthia Nixon's Instagram with that poem. So amazing. I am not a New Yorker. I'm in Minnesota, but I love it. I love it. It's fun. Mm-hmm. The TV show I'm watching, I always show up with like a kid show for adults, but Carl the Collector on PBS. It's a show about an autistic raccoon named Carl, who you're not going to believe this, but he collects things and he's got a lot of neurodivergent friends. I was just watching. I was like, what's going on here? And it's great. I am of the ADHD delegation, but I definitely saw a lot of my friends on that show. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, like there's a fox who likes to make beats on her synthesizers. I'm like, I did in fact date a guy who loved synthesizers. It's just a really sweet show. I wish they would go into more of the adults in this community and like, because I really want to know if like the lion who runs the ice cream truck, if like he's just doing it as his job or if he's really into ice cream like that. But it's just a wonderful show. And they have like two like short episodes every, you know, it's a half hour thing on PBS. I've talked to other people who actually have kids and they're like, no, this is a great show. I love it. My plug is next week, the 24th through the 27th, June 24th through the 27th, I am at Acme Comedy Company in Minneapolis. I am featuring for Jackie Cation.
Woo!
And yeah, like, nice. Come on down. There's a link, my calendar of upcoming events, upcoming shows, podcasts or media appearances. Yes, it is a Google spreadsheet. It's cheaper than a website and easy to update. But come on down, buy some of my buttons.
Hell yeah.
Enjoying the opera war?
Sarah D. Bunting, what do you got?
Glad this is continuing to be a basketball podcast. I sort of accidentally fell into a Mad Men rewatch like 6 weeks ago. It was probably right after we watched the Cannon pitched episode, The Suitcase. I'm not sure exactly how long ago, but I just kept going from whatever point I dropped into. And then I was like, well, I've actually been meaning to rewatch from the beginning for years now, so I'm just going to go back to the beginning. It's really nice to return to the show over a decade after it ended and almost 20 years after it premiered. Holy shit. It's held up quite well. It's still visually stunning. It's still viscerally irritating in some aspects that it intends and others that it doesn't. Sylvia, Diana. But overall, it's a much more pleasing or fulfilling experience to watch it marathon style on demand now, without having to wait a week or a year between episodes, not just for that reason, and that you already kind of know how all the various plots and subplots turn out, but because a dozen years ago, Every episode was so hotly anticipated, so fraught, so carefully guarded against spoilers and leaks, so closely scrutinized and interrogated textually, that it was like you couldn't just be told the story and enjoy it. Certainly a TV critic literally could not, quote, just watch it. You had to digest it and then hawk up an owl pellet of a take ASAP. And I think it was starting to feel that way for civilians also at the time. Once that weight is off, because the show is over, you could just watch it and marvel at the outfits and source the furniture and get up to get a water during scenes you know don't really go anywhere or that involve Glenn. Shrug that you see what they're trying to do with X or Y character and not have to worry that the wordplay on baby Jean or Jeannie's name is going to be on the discourse test. It's just a much more fulfilling experience without having to be discourse forward with your reaction. And for what it's worth, the finale stuck the landing a little bit better than I remembered. Even the Peggy Stan thing felt like a last minute, oh shit, we forgot to see this scramble of a scene. But the actors sold it, and it's a great show. It holds up. Maybe not as without flaw as we all received it back then, but worth checking out again if you've been thinking about doing that. For my plug, there is a major case sale at Exhibit B Books. That's my all true crime bookshop that lasts until June 20th. Major cases include D.B. Cooper. There will be a link to that in the show notes. What does the cart do at my shop, Dave?
The cart does the math.
Fucking A.
True crime. Yeah.
All right, here's what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday for our club members. It is the June Forcening, and we'll be talking about the show From, which is one of the, just going to put it up there, maybe three, number four for the worst SEO title TV show.
Oh my God.
Yep. Under episodes, but still pretty high.
Infuriating. Yes.
So poor that I didn't know this show existed until it came on to the Forcening list. So yep. There you go.
Well, that bad title plus it's on MGM Plus.
Well, there you go. That is available to club members. Go to extrahotgreat.com/club. A lot more to these episodes. Of course, you got Ask EHG. We do Not Quite Winners and Losers of the Week. Lots of good stuff for you there. And then come back here next week. EHG Prime will be talking about Million Dollar Nannies. And we're welcoming back Stephanie Green Screen, Early Green, for that one. Quickly, Tara, what is Million Dollar Nannies and can we afford one?
We cannot. Okay. It's exactly what you think. It's an unscripted reality show in the Bravo mode about people who are nannies for very, very wealthy.
Oh, they're not actually guarding $1 million.
Yes, but it's not actually on Bravo. It's on Freeform. So we'll be able to discuss how that affects what we see, if that makes it better or worse, if it's, you know, a Bravo show that's not actually literally on Bravo.
Great. I said briefly. Let's go.
All right.
God. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon presenting this week. It is Sarah D. Butting.
Hey, everybody. It's everybody's favorite Buncey here to present Law & Order Mothership Season 1, Episode 6, everybody's favorite Bagman, for admission to the bar in the Extra Hot Great Canon. The first reason I think this is canon-worthy is that, well, it is the first episode, technically. It wasn't aired that way at the time. It's not ordered that way on the DVDs or on streaming or in reruns ever, but everybody's favorite Bagman was shot as the pilot of Law & Order in 1988. It was bought by Fox, which tagged on a 13-episode order and then booted it to CBS. Then it finally ended up at NBC, where execs decided that this first episode was a little too something, gritty, New York-y, to lead off for the series. but you can definitely tell this episode thing is not entirely like the others. The DA is Alfred Wentworth, not Adam Schiff, and he's played by Roy Thins, not Stephen Hill. Everyone's hair is longer and 80s-er. They're at the 36th precinct, not the 27, although both are fictional. The squad room and the ADA nest of offices are a lot more crowded. There's more artsy handheld shit happening. The time between the initial events of the case in November and the beginning of legal proceedings in March is actually credible. And it's the only time Steven Zernkilton, the opening narration guy, was ever in front of the camera here as an FBI mobile command staffer in clip two.
Which includes Park.
Look at that. Do you believe these guys?
So, it's canon-worthy because it's the answer to a trivia question, or five, but it's also canon-worthy because it's both atypical and very typical of 90s Law & Orders as we would come to know them. The central case is, in fact, ripped from a very New York-y pastiche of contemporary headlines like the Donald Manus scandal and Abscam, and the gangland murders of Wilfred Johnson and Dutch Schultz. Not contemporary, but you know what I mean. George Zunza's Max Grevy is not anyone's favorite anything, let's be real, but the rest of the credits cast characters, Chris Noth's Mike Logan, Dan Florek's Captain Don Cragen, Michael Moriarty's Ben Stone and his chicken ball, and Richard Brooks's Paul Robinette are pretty much peak Law and Order prior to Briscoe showing up. And as befitting an episode I'm pitching during Pride Month, it has a full rainbow of Hey, It's That Guys. Leaving aside the legit names, William H. Macy is an AUSA, credited here as W.H. Macy, Paul Jim Brass Guilfoyle as Masucci soldier Tony Scalise, and Trey Nathan Arizona Wilson as Scalise's attorney, you've also got John Fiore, as yet uncredited as Profaci, although he does get a line.
That blew my mind, that he's not even in the credits on IMDb.
I know. And also uncredited Mike Goodfellas Starr as a truck driver eyewitness, Marcia Jean Kurtz, a.k.a. the Hedda Nussbaum from the Lisa Steinberg episode, whose line delivery of Pookie chilled the generation to the bone in reruns. Here she's the victim's wife. Tony Award winner Dick Latessa, veteran of several other Law & Orders, including the Tailhook one with Juliana Margulies, as the Manhattan Borough president. Stephen Gilborn, a.k.a. Ellen's dad on Ellen, as an ER doc. Ronald Emile Calvé Gutman, who has showed up all over the Ellen-O-verse, usually as an orchestra conductor or art dealer. And Tara, Trish's manager in Fire and Ice on 90210. The great Sully Boyer, later a show regular as arraignment judge Harvey Serkin, but also a Sopranos legend as the shrink who tells Carmela to take the kids and leave Tony. And last but not least, Stephen Perlman, a New York theater stalwart who sadly passed away back in the 1990s. Prior to Bagman, though, where he's a snarky fellow detective, Perlman appeared as a pawnbroker on a single episode of ABC half-hour soap Loving back in the 80s, on which occasion his character got his ass killed by my husband's character, Spider Smith. Should have knocked it off, sweet cheeks. And it's got a surprising number of iconic lines and line deliveries that persisted in the fandom, starting with clip three.
He's a Batman?
Was, if you believe the rumors.
Oh, this really frosts my cookies, Max.
Just an aside here, I know Noth is canceled. I accept that, and I will continue to. But my fellow erstwhile Loganettes have to agree that original pilot Logan and that foxy, wavy coif probably need to go in the Widow's Peak tiny canon. El Scorchio, I am not a crackpot. Okay, sorry. Here's another memorable exchange. People remember Anthony K. Means' simonize, malapropping a legal objection, but they may not recall just how quickly the show started normalizing our heroes, the police, lying to suspects, slapping them upside the head, appropriating AAVE for use as a patronizing bias fulcrum, and making cheesy side bets with each other on how fast they can get a substance misuser to crack during interrogation, clip four.
Chuck and Gibb don't know nothing, and you ain't got squat on me except for what he said. And that's just heresy.
The word's hearsay, Simonize.
Yeah, that's it. And I'd be good for no say.
Hey, shut up.
We don't dig being dissed by lightweights.
Mike, he's not being disrespectful. He's just being reflective.
What are you looking at? Turn around. Eight arrests and he still doesn't get it? Hey, judges help those who help themselves.
Going.
No, I'm not talking about a year at Spofford.
Going.
Don't be stupid.
Gone. Thank the cage, Simon Eyes.
I said it was a prototypical episode, not that everything in the prototype was awesome. See also Robinette getting maybe 3 minutes of screen time before he's forced to do the are you a black man with a law degree or a lawyer who's black thing at speed in front of his boss for the first of 78,000 times. At least the show acknowledges some of this reality in clip 5.
You the man?
We sure are, honey.
And in the subsequent scene, when a black suspect's grandmother says it's the first time the police have bothered even bringing a search warrant to search her grandson's room. But this is what post-Ed Koch procedurals did when adapting contemporary tri-state stories, and still do today. And the show had the ability to make its propaganda seem verite in the good way from the very beginning. And finally, there's Moriarty's horrified line delivery when it becomes clear Scalise is going to get greased for wearing a wire, clip 6.
You're not wearing radios.
What?
You can't hide the wires.
This guy's not going to the park.
Oh my God.
Me opening the fridge to see we're out of Pepsi Zero Sugar.
Oh my God.
Me hearing the first drops of a rainstorm and realizing I left the car windows open.
Oh my God.
Me saying that a cat is about to barf on electronics and it's too late to move her.
Oh my God.
This is always how it's pronounced. This is only how it's pronounced. I didn't start watching Law & Order until the mid-90s when my then roommate introduced me to the A&E evening rock block of reruns. Thank you, Sanjay. So it's hard to say if this episode would have enticed me when it originally aired or if they were right to move it in the airing order. I can say that everybody's favorite bagman is very typical of the show in good ways and less good. Well-paced, acted, and shot, including a filmed sequence that ends with Logan garbage can-lidding a fleeing suspect with a satisfying clang, and it comes in at a watchably lean for its era 45 minutes, and a historic proof-of-concept pilot that eventually turned Dick Wolf into the super producer he is today. Let's hope I acquitted myself well enough in this pitch to get everybody's favorite bagman into the extra hot gray canon.
Thank you, Sarah. Brandy, you selected this from our options. Please start off the discussion.
Well, as a fellow frequent guest on podcast, These Are Their Stories.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm definitely a Law & Order head. Does anyone know what race the kids were? I wasn't clear. Were they black? No. Because they kept referring to the kids as like the black kids. Like you could have, at the point that you established they were black, it was just like that was their title, the black kids. The black. Mm-hmm. They were like, we arrested the black kids. Oh, okay. And I'm so used to that happening in this like cohort of Law & Orders. I'm just like, but it was an excessive number of saying the black kids, even, you know, including racism that would always
Dick
happen.
Wolf characters are famously colorblind, so it helps for them to say it out loud to give them
They're
a
like,
reminder.
Oh, what race were they? Yeah. I don't see color. My other favorite game to play when I'm watching old episodes of Law & Order is, was this made before HIPAA? And you can kind of tell, like, I always have to like look up when HIPAA was 1996, and you can definitely see like a break where they're a little like fast and loose with getting medical information. The other thing is Dan Florek, so he just always looks that age. Like never ages. He just always looks like that. That's actually fascinating that this was the pilot episode. You really can't, I mean, except for like, you know, a few cast members here, but since that's not like the era I would watch the most, I really didn't notice anything off. Like, that's pretty impressive. The other thing about these early, especially season one, is the music. The music breaks are like the doom, 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 doom. It's very, there's one episode, and I don't know which one it is, but it's definitely like a Chris Noth early episode where they stop and they have like a dance break. They're like walking off and like the
I know the one
plays,
you're talking
and they
about.
Have like a, and you just see their back, and then they just continue, and no one speaks of this. It's just, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I know that one too.
And then the final thing I will say, and it's a fun thing to watch with especially Black actors on early episodes of Law & Order, is that like the standard for being a Black actor versus a white actor on Law & Order back in the day was so much higher that you would have like true like thespians. Like they would be giving, it would be like a background actor and they're like, hey, did you see someone run by? And they'd be like, for I have not seen someone run by. Oh, the tragedy. It, just a very, very strong actors. And so like, it's fascinating. Do you happen to know why they went with, like, why it's aired number six versus, you know, what is commonly accepted as one, episode one?
If I had to guess, I would think it was because the actual court part is almost non-existent. So it's it's heavy on the cop half and very light on lawyer stuff.
There's also a lot of monologuing by Greavy, but that kind of can't be avoided until the show finally killed him off.
Yay. I hate him so much.
Oh my, I wasn't going to say it, but yes.
I hate him. I was like, when he died, I was like, yay. My mom's like, what? Like, just like, why are you so excited?
Yeah, he's not good.
You know what I said when he died?
Oh my God.
He frosted my cookies.
Yep.
One of the signal most Law & Order-y elements I found was Greavy complaining about this being a media case. Ooh, those dirty journalists. I hate them so much. That was another part of this episode that sort of gets massaged out once it actually is going, which is showing how people in the law enforcement side can use journalists to their own ends by, you know, leaking some information strategically. It comes up now and then, but like for this to be in what was going to be the pilot is unusual. That's another thing that sets it apart from other episodes. It is remarkable, though, to see how many signature Law & Order touches and personnel are in place here. I mean, your list was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I also appreciated that Robinette's kind of no-win professional situation is a significant part of his half of the episode. Like, they sort of go back and forth on how much they acknowledge that going forward. Up until, I would say, he comes back as a defense attorney, that one is a good one.
Also, that his tiny little office is smaller than the you've been ousted from Star City. Now you have to go work in the basement offices they give him on that show.
Yeah. When he gets up to shake their hand, he can't even stand up all the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's definitely in Milton from Office Space.
The fire escape assisted chase is fun, especially I like the touch where Logan starts to pull his gun and then decides against it and just goes with the trash can lid instead. Yeah. It's like, okay, that tells me something about this character or what they want me to think about him. Yes, Dave.
Sure, but it felt like in the moment there wasn't actually somebody hitting that lid. It barely moved. You heard a ka-dong.
Yes.
But like that thing weighs about 1/4 of a pound max. It's an aluminum trash can lid. Mm-hmm. It's not knocking anybody out, but they treated it like it was a manhole cover. I thought that was pretty funny.
Well, that actor learned trash can combat at Juilliard.
That's right. You know that guy said when he was right there in front of that lid?
And that's how I got into Juilliard?
Oh my God! Oh.
That's absolutely what he said.
It does suck that the franchise is tainted by Chris Noth. There have been many tiny canon and main canon things I have discarded because the people involved are should not be accepted in polite society anymore. But that said,
Moriarty is not much better, honestly, although I think he's mentally ill versus... Perhaps. Dude, but he could be both.
That said, though, you're so right. He's extremely, Noth is extremely foxy. In this episode, his hair is amazing. And the fact that he is in a little plaid tie, like from jump, it was also really funny to me. But all of this said, there are many episodes of Law & Order. This is the problem with this franchise. Is like,
you're right. There are a lot.
You know.
No, it's just backing you up. I just realized how many there are.
There are probably dozens that I would, like, if someone was like, name 10 episodes of Law & Order that you love, this would probably not be on my list, unfortunately. I see why you picked it, but it's, to me, it doesn't rise to the level of other ones that I found, you know, especially memorable or shocking or however you decide what your criteria are for Law & Order. I do think it's interesting that it's a curio. I would certainly submit that, oh my God, for Tiny Cannon. But I am not convinced that this should be a canon entry for me. Dave.
I'm sort of on the same wave. Like, I loved the rawness of the presentation here. Like, I had absolutely forgotten that this is how this show started. It seemed much grittier. Obviously, they're shooting on film. That creates a much different feel. How gritty everything was, working in that Barney Miller-esque police precinct instead of wherever they went later to, you know, some set. The shaky cam, the Ford Granada-esque looking cruisers with their baby blue paint still, like all that sort of stuff, very much of his time. I really enjoyed the trappings of it. I kind of wish that could have been carried through to the actual series. I thought that was something that, having revisited it, I feel like they could have followed through for the rest of the series. I would have liked it more. But I get that it's probably twice as expensive as doing it the way they did it. But it gets sanitized as you go along pretty quickly, I guess.
For sure.
So I love that part of it. I love the presentation part of it. I wasn't so big on the story for the reasons that Tara is saying. Like, you got such a corpus of episodes to draw from. It's hard to compare this one, which is doing a lot of pilot-y stuff. And I agree that the law part of it didn't really get its due here. But just generally, I thought the story wasn't memorable in the way that, when you have so much to choose from, that I would want.
I wouldn't say one thing before we vote in defense of this episode from a, I know I was making fun of like the black kids, but what this does set up, and I don't know a lot about like the other cop shows before this, what this does that's really interesting is it does set up how they're going to handle race. And they do some interesting things there where they do, they make, you know, they say the cliche thing that they keep saying to Robinette, hey, are you like a, you know, a prosecutor or a black man first? But they also bring up that like black people can be baddies too, like in power, they can be just like, basically they ACABed a black cop right away with that, his mentor. And they kind of forced him to see like, oh, I'm part of this terrible system, but also like people I trusted who are a part of the black community also like were perpetuating harm. And I thought that that was very interesting. And I also think that it was also, you know, just setting up the, hey, we're going to make you think like, yeah, these black kids did crime. I think it is an interesting, from a historical perspective, looking at how, if you're going to like line it up with other conflicts of interest or dealing with race from the, not just the suspect side, but internally. So I will give it credit there.
I forgot to mention one thing while we're doing cleanup, which is I always appreciate a Law and Order deli scene where they're just getting a sandwich or something and they have to interact with the deli guy who's always an asshole. They're never like, I'm glad to see you here. Here you go. They're always got some glib thing to say. So never change Law and Order. All right, let's put this to the official vote. Brandy, what say you?
I'm going to say yes.
Tara Ariano.
A regretful no, but thank you, A, for the presentation, and B, for that sound drop, because I assume we're going to be hearing it a bunch.
Oh, my God, Dave.
What's Sarah going to say after I am about to deliver my marginal no vote?
Oh, my God.
Possibly.
Yes.
So that means, unfortunately, but officially, that Law & Order Season 1, Episode 6, Everybody's Favorite Bagman. It was close, but not quite in the canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover who our winners and losers of the week are. Tara has this week's winner.
I do. First of all, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is and add to my two canon list the one I always refer to, which is Mad Dog, the one with Burt Young, where he's the rapist who's just gotten out of prison and like McCoy goes crazy trying to basically infringe all of the limited rights he has.
And Oh My God is now Tiny Canon eligible. So
there you go. It is.
Let's go.
All right. My winner of the week is our friend and past guest, Stephen Falk. You just heard him in December in our most recent Mullen Dash episode. He is producing a Netflix series that is spun off from the 2024 movie Hitman, starring Glenn Powell and co-written by him and directed by Richard Linklater. That was a really fun movie, and I think it definitely has series potential, so I'm very excited to see what our friend Steve does with it.
And loser of the week.
I am also excited for that because I can cover it on Best Evidence, and that is always a pleasure. based on a real guy. My loser, unfortunately, is Real Housewives of New Jersey daughter Melania Giudice, who has been arrested for assault. We don't have a ton of details about that, but in the Vulture story, there was this quote, "Maybe we'll get more clarity on what happened in the new season."
A word?
Sure, but the second thing isn't correlated to the first, I'm sure. No siree. I just feel like some of the Giudice slits never had a chance. Melania, chief among them. Stop being on TV. Get your child some help. She needs it.
Well, speaking about getting your child some help because she needs it, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
Welcome back to Game Time. This is the fourth of our current season. The scores are Tara with 1, Sarah looking to get on the board, Value Guess leading with 2 points. Today we are playing Sorkin Ass Names from Erica with a major assist from the EHD Discord team, who earns herself an extra credit topic of her choosing plus a free shirt from our store at throughmethods.com. In this game, I will read you a name, and you will tell me if this character is created by Aaron Sorkin or from a Aaron Sorkin property. Sports Night, West Wing, Newsroom, or Studio 60. Those are the 4 shows we're talking about. A correct answer is worth 1 point. Every question has an opportunity for a bonus point. If you answer yes, the bonus point is what show are they from? If the answer is no, and it is not from that show, these are from something else. And then you have to tell me what they are from a multiple choice.
Got it. All right.
So that's it. I'll guide you through it as we go along. All right. No Stew Meals because of the nature of the quiz. So let's throw it to Picky to see our order today.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. Sarah, Brandy, Tara is our order. 30 questions, 1 Gross Earth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Are we ready to play Sorkin Ass Names?
Yes.
Okay, starting off with Sarah D. Bunting, I'm going to read you a character name. You tell me whether it is a Sorkin Ass name or it is not, and we will go from there. Your name is Harriet Hayes. Harriet Hayes. Nobody can steal your points, so talk it out if you need to.
Okay. I feel like I know that name. I'm not sure which show it's from, but I'm going to say that it is Sorkin Ass.
You are correct. It is Sorkin Ass. Now, for a bonus point, tell me which of those 4 Sorkin shows that character is from. West Wing, Studio 60, Newsroom, or Sports Night?
I think it's Newsroom.
You are incorrect. Studio 60.
Yeah.
To Brandy. Your Sorkin ass name is Gina Toscano. Gina Toscano. Oh. Is that a Sorkin ass name or not? I mean, they all are. But was it actually from a Sorkin show?
It feels like one, and I have the show it feels like, but I don't think it is. So no, it is not a Sorkin property.
It is. Yeah. All right. Still got that bonus point, though. So Gina Toscano. What show do you think that character is from? 1 in 4 chance here.
I'm gonna say Newsroom.
You are incorrect. That was Georgia Fox from West Wing. Tara, are you ready for yours?
Yes, I am.
Your Sorkin ass name is Steve Sweet. Steve Sweet.
Not Sorkin.
You are correct. It is not a Sorkin character. Is Steve Sweet a... an influencer who reviews bakeries in the Pacific Northwest, B, the drummer for glam metal band Warrant, or C, a professional poker player known for his dumb cowboy hat?
Poker?
He is the drummer for Warrant.
Good for him.
Got a lot of things to say about cherry pie.
I was going to say.
All right, back to Sarah D. Bunting. We've got for you Laith Pierre. Laith Pierre.
Sorkin ass.
No, not Sorkin esque, but you get opportunity for a point if you can tell me who they really are. Is Laith Pierre a character from horror video game Poppy Playtime, B, a barnstorming aviator in the 1920s, or C, inventor of the e-bike? Laith Pierre.
Barnstormer.
You are incorrect. It is a character from Poppy Playtime.
Okay.
Brandy, you've got Mike Casper. Mike Casper. Sorkin-ass name, but is it from a Sorkin show?
I am going to say yes, a Sorkin show.
You are correct, but which show?
Sports Night.
That was Clark Gregg's character from West Wing. West Wing. Tara.
Yes.
Gordon Gage. Gordon Gage.
Sorkin.
Sorkin is correct. Yes, but what show?
Sports Night.
You are correct.
Oh.
Do you know who played him?
I do not.
Ted McGinley.
Oh, yeah, good for
Ted. The show killer.
Back to Sarah. You got Ricky Tahoe. Problem with Ricky Tahoe is all the liquid glass all over his interface. It sucks.
Ricky Tahoe.
Personally, I like Ricky Sequoia. All right. Is that from a Sorkin show? Certainly a Sorkin-ass name, but is it real?
Yeah, it is. I'm going to say Sorkin.
You are correct. What Sorkin show? Sports Night, West Wing, Studio 60, or The Newsroom?
Let's try Studio 60.
You are correct. Oh, Evan Handler. Nice. Oh. Back to Brandy. You have Glenn Allen Mixon. Glenn Allen Mixon. Mixon with an M.
It's a Sorkin-ass name, but no. Not a Sorkin show.
You are correct. It is not from a Sorkin show. Is Glenn Allen Mixon a player from a 90s baseball video game, B, a former senator from Vermont, or C, an Australian serial arsonist?
Or D, one of the things you can put in your ice cream at Cold Stone Creamery.
Glenn Allen Mixon.
Mm.
Want it? Need it? Gotta have it.
Is it C?
No, it's one of the famous American names that a Japanese baseball game tried to come up with.
Awesome.
Oh, it's also like confusing with Joe Mixon. Like, or, like, there's like an athlete, but okay.
Tar.
Yep.
Sandy Whittles. Sandy Whittles.
Not Sorkin.
Incorrect. Actual Sorkin. I'm going to take a stab here.
Sandy Whittles. I'm going to say Sports Night again.
Newsroom. No point. Sarah.
Yeah.
Elsie Snuffin. Elsie Snuffin.
Jesus. It's like going, it's like to Sorkin and has come back around.
Yeah.
To not Sorkin. Elsie Snuffin.
Elsie Snuffin.
Not Sorkin.
It is Sorkin.
Ah!
All right. What show is Elsie Snuffin from?
West Wing.
Correct. It is the West Wing. Any idea who played her? Anybody?
No, but I do remember that.
Danica McKellar.
Oh.
Everybody's favorite mathematician, right?
Thinking of Josh Gondelman's bit about the Cruffin. It's like a special.
Yep.
All right, Brandy, you've got Lionel Tribby. Lionel Tribby.
It's a Sorkin property.
Correct. Which one?
Newsroom?
West Wing.
Damn it.
As played by John Larroquette.
Oh, Tara. Right.
Yep.
Jack Spaniel.
Oh, my God. Sorkin?
Yes.
Okay.
From?
Studio 60.
Newsroom, played by Jimmy Simpson.
Oh.
Oh, Jimmy.
Back to Sarah. You've got Maverick McNeely.
Maverick McNeely.
Maverick McNeely.
Not Sorkin.
You are correct. Is Maverick McNeely really A character from children's cartoon show Dino Riders, B, one of the truckers on Ice Road Truckers, or C, a pro golfer who qualified for the U.S. Open as a teenager? Maverick McNeely.
Golf.
Correct. Yes.
Nice.
All right. Back to Brandy. You've got Sam Donovan. Sam Donovan.
I'm going to say it's a Sorkin.
It is Sorkin. Yes, you are correct. What show is Sam Donovan from?
I'm going to say Newsroom again.
Sports Night, William H. Macy, his second appearance on the podcast.
Speak of the devil.
Tara.
Yep.
Shandor Alfonso.
Not Sorkin.
You are correct. Is Shandor Alfonso A, an NHL linesman, B, an NPC in Baldur's Gate 3, or C, the mayor of Baltimore, Maryland?
C?
Nope. He's an NHL official.
Oh, okay.
Sarah, Hallie Galloway.
Sorkin.
Sorkin is correct. From the show.
Hallie Galloway is from...
Fuck.
Newsroom.
Is it Newsroom? Nope. Studio 60, played by Stephanie Childers.
Oh, good for her.
All right, Brandy. Tolman Trask. Is that a Sorkin-ass name? Yes, but is it a real Sorkin-ass name from a real Sorkin show? Tolman Trask.
I'm going to say not a Sorkin show.
Correct.
Wow.
Is Tolman Trask a former VP at Duke University, B, a character in the Stephen King novel Insomnia, or C, an urban legend out of Portland, Oregon?
That honestly feels like a Duke name.
So A, former VP at Duke?
Yeah.
You are correct.
Wow.
Yes. Nicely done.
Yeah, that's Duke.
All right, this will take us into our score break. It is for Tara.
Yep.
Your Sorkin-esque name is Nancy McNally.
That's real. That's
is
Sorkin.
It real? It is from?
That's Anna Deavere Smith from The West Wing.
You are correct.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, 2 points there. It is time for our scores, please.
Oh my God, it's so close. Brandy has 6 points. Sarah and I are tied with 7.
All right, that means Brandy, this could be very strategic for you. You are in the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge.
All right. Oh, man.
All right, usually I make you pick a number, but since this is the West Wing and we know it started 1999, the same year as we sort of got down to brass tacks on TWAP, I'm going to pick for you the 90s edition Trivial Pursuit box. So you have to answer 6 TV questions. Answer 3, we're going to give you 2 points. Sweep the card, we'll give you 4 points. So you pull ahead here with 3 good answers. The nice thing about this box is that also for each card, you get the year that it is about. So I will read you the year and the question. Okay, here we go. What theater got a multi-million dollar facelift before becoming home to The Late Show with David Letterman?
Is it Radio City?
It is the Ed Sullivan Theater. Oh, so, all right. The sweep is off the board, but you need 3 of these next 5 questions to get 2 points.
I believe in you.
1993 right. Again. What ABC police drama was limited to 37 off-color phrases per show upon its 1993 debut?
Wow.
Is it NYPD Blue?
It is, yes. Woo! Nicely done.
Woo!
1992. What reality show debuted in New York City with an angst-ridden cast of Eric, Julie, Heather, Becky, Kevin, Norman, and Andre?
Real World.
Hell yeah.
You are correct. Yeah. 1992. What Seinfeld character eschews fruit because it makes him incontinent and eschews the beach because he freckles?
Is it George?
Newman. All right, so it comes down to this. You have to get this right to get your 2 points. 1992. What network was started by Ted Turner to air the Hanna-Barbera collection he acquired?
The Cartoon Network.
The Cartoon Network is correct. You got your 2 points.
Finally an age-appropriate question from when I was. Like, I was that age.
Yep.
All right. Now you're ahead by 1 point, and we have a little less than half the game to go, so let's get back to it. Back to Sarah D. Bunting. Your Sorkin-esque name, you have to determine whether it actually is a character from a Sorkin show, is Cord Overstreet.
Not a Sorkin character.
You are correct. Is Cord Overstreet a character from the movie Dead Poets Society, B, an actor from Glee, or C, the author of Harlequin Romances?
B
is correct. She knew that one.
Knox Overstreet is from Dead Poets Society. Come on.
2 points. Back to Brandy. You've got Dylan Killington. Real Sorkin character or just sounds like one?
I'm going to say it. Dylan Kellington is a real Sorkin character.
You are correct. He is, but from what show?
I'm going to just stick with what you're going with. Newsroom. One day it'll be right. Newsroom.
Not today.
Damn it.
Not today.
Studio 60. That was Nate Torrance's character.
Oh, that's right.
Tara.
Yep.
Sally Sasser.
That's Sorkin.
From?
Sports Night.
Played by?
Is that Brenda Strong?
The yep. Brawless Wonder.
All right. Back to Sarah. Sloane Sabbath. Sloane Sabbath.
Sabbath?
Yeah. S-A-B-B-I-T-H.
That's right.
Oh. Oops, I guess I gave it away.
Yeah.
Sorkin.
From what show? Tara, try not to spell it out.
I'm sorry.
Newsroom.
Newsroom is, in fact, the correct answer. Yes, played by Olivia Munn.
Oh.
The Munster.
Back. What do you like better, Adam's Family or the Munster? Bartlett Shear is your character name, Brandy. Bartlett Shear. S-H-E-R. Shear.
I'm going to say not a Sorkin property.
You would be correct. Is Bartlett Shear A, an actor from the 1954 Western film Johnny Guitar, B, a former conductor of the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra, or C, the Tony Award-winning director of a revival of South Pacific?
I'm gonna guess B, the conductor.
You are incorrect. He is the director of South Pacific. Back to Tara.
Yes.
Holly Holm, H-O-L-M.
Not Sorkin.
You are correct. Is Holly Holm the first boxer to defeat Ronda Rousey in a pro tournament? B, a former U.S. poet laureate? Or C, an 80s softcore porn actor? Lots of choice.
Porn. Damn.
First boxer to defeat Rousey.
Sorry to this woman.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yep.
Simon Stiles. Is Simon Stiles a real Sorkin-esque character name?
I think yes.
You are correct, but from what show, Sarah?
Simon Stiles. Fuck. West Wing?
Studio 60, played
God
by
damn you, Studio 60.
D.L. Hughley.
Right.
All right. Brandy. You've got Percy Fitzwallace.
That feels like a Sorkin property.
You are correct. Which one?
Newsroom.
Damn it!
West Wing, played by Die Hard 2's John Amos.
John Amos.
Right. That's right. Die Hard 2's John Amos.
Also, Suits LA's John Amos, lest we forget.
That's right.
Murder, She Wrote, John Amos.
John Amos's parents, John Amos. Tara.
Yes.
Rebecca Wells.
Sorkin?
Yes. What show?
Is this also Sports Night?
Yes. Played by anybody?
Nice. Mm-mm.
Terry Polo?
Yep.
Oh, good one, Sarah.
All right. Everybody has one question left, so I'm going to ask for the scores, please.
Oh, my God. It's still so fucking close. Brandy has 11. Sarah and I are tied again with 12 each.
Shit!
All right. So anybody's game. Here is Sarah's last question. Shay Gillis Alexander. I'm happy to spell any part of that for you, especially the middle name.
Could I just hear the whole name again, please?
Shay Gillis Alexander. G-I-L-G-E-O-U-S hyphen Alexander.
Oh. This really is a baseball podcast. That's not a Sorkin character.
You are correct. Is Shay Gillis Alexander a... editor-in-chief of Men's Health magazine. B, a Canadian basketball player on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Or C, lead singer of the indie rock band The Wombats.
I believe in Shay, but it's B.
You are correct. 2 points.
Also a very good actor. A very good actor.
Yeah.
Comes being real, fouled.
Real floppy.
Oh, sure.
Brandy, last one. Andy Mackinaw. Andy Mackinaw.
Can I get a spelling on Mackinaw?
Yeah. M-A-C-K-I-N-A-W.
I'm going to say it is a property of Aaron Sorkin.
He is a Sorkin-esque character. Yep. From what show?
Newsroom? Damn it!
No, that was from Studio 60, and it's Mark McKinney, which makes me think that is Sorkin's Canadian-ass Sorkin name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Andy Mackinac, very Canadian-coded.
Yeah.
All right, last regulation question is for Tara.
Yep.
You've got Cave Johnson.
Not Sorkin.
Correct. Is Cave Johnson a host of the wilderness survival show Underground with Cave Johnson?
Okay.
B, Prohibition era bootlegger who worked with Al Capone. Mm. Or C, the founder of Aperture Science in the video game Portal 2.
Portal 2?
You are correct.
What?
All right, that's regulation. Wow. Nicely done. When I saw that question, I'm like, guys, that's a good one.
Whoa.
All right.
Yeah. That was rough.
Probably the only one I knew.
Oh, my God.
Let's hear the final scores.
Brandy finished so strong with 12, but Sarah and I, as we've been throughout the game, are tied with 14 points each.
All right. This is very exciting. I do have a tiebreaker.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you both to write down your answers because I no longer trust you guys in this sort of game.
Okay.
Okay. So get a piece of paper.
Yep.
What did I
get
do?
Get a writing. You know what you did.
I don't.
We're on the honor system to pick a number.
Yeah.
And then lock yourself in. And then when I go to ask you your turn, you're like, either you say the number right away or you're bullshitting me. That's why we're writing things down now. I don't want to hear it. This is the way it's working now.
I'm sure he doesn't mean you.
I'm sure I don't mean anybody
sure
on this podcast
now. Sure he doesn't also.
Silence.
I'm also going to play.
Silence. All right. Here's where this is going. I'm going to read you a question. You have to answer. Closest to the pin will win. Here we go. Over all four shows, how many main credit characters have first and last names that start with the same letter? So how many alliterative character names based on the opening credit actor names do we have across those four shows? Write down your answer.
Okay. I've written it down.
Thank you. And once everybody's locked
in. I've also written it down.
Thank you. All right. We're going to start with Sarah D. Bunting. Oh. How many alliterative character names do we have across all the shows we've been talking about today? Hit me.
11.
11. Tara.
6.
6. I'm here to tell you that the answer was...
Oh, wait. Brandy also wanted
to play. Wait, so is it across the questions we had? I just put 97 for like the shows.
97.
For like all the shows.
Well, hang on. I gotta redo my math.
That would be high for opening credits cast.
97 seems to be the furthest away from the pin. Mm-mm. All right. The answer was from West Wing, we had Sam Seaborn, CJ Craig. From Newsroom, we got Mackenzie McHale and Sloane Sabbath.
Right.
And from Studio 60, we had Simon Stiles and Harriet Hayes. The answer, Bullseye, 6.
Oh!
Wow.
Damn.
Wait, you only said 3 shows, though.
Tara.
There's none in the other one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good job, Tara.
Thanks. Good job to you as well. Good job to us all.
Thank you. Defend my honor after this record.
That was a fun game. Thank you very much. I really
it was.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Grade. We were placed in TV detention and forced to watch Never Change before going around the dial. What would you rather watch? Never Change for a second time or the What's His Nuts Dick Tracy keeping
the
rights
Warren
thing?
Warren Beatty thing?
The Warren Beatty Dick Tracy special.
I mean, that one is shorter, so I guess that.
It's true.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's the answer. That is amazing. Mm-hmm. Before going around the dial, we'll stop at Miss You, Love You, Office Romance, The Gilded Age, Carl the Collector, and Mad Men. Sarah couldn't bag a cannon for the intended Law & Order pilot. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Tara was the winner of this week's Sorkin-y Game Time from Erica. Next up, it's From in the June Forcening Pool on Extra. Extra Hot Great. Remember.
We're listening.
Ah. I am David Teagle, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
What am I, Karnak?
Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh my God.
And Brandy Brown.
I too have a Sorkin-ass name.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Awkward.
You know what they're saying about you?
You know I don't listen when people speak.
Oh my God!